Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on Thursday morning, July 16, 2009. It is now 6:30 a.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to be revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good morning, everyone. During our live broadcast, we do invite you to call 646-652-4620. You can email us at comments@libertytalkradio.com. That's comments@libertytalkradio.com. Yeah, I encourage you also to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com, mytwocentsonline.com, and that two is a numeric two. In his weekly newsletter, Andy discusses economic issues and how they affect you. You can also listen to Andy's commentary on ContraryInvestorsCafe.com. Now, folks, things are moving along. And when we say moving along, we mean truly moving along. Now the president is looking at a second stimulus package. Why? The first one didn't work. Because they don't work. They're silly. They're stupid. They make absolutely no economic sense whatsoever. Keynesian economics is wrong. It doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So here we are. And things are getting worse. Lastly, I would like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. This morning we have Joe Florio calling from Florida. He's here to defend somewhat the government intervention in the auto industry and the bailouts. Let's see, he's on the line now. Joe, is that you?
Yes, Joe. How are you this morning?
Fine, Joe. Thank you so much for being our guest this morning and calling in and getting up. I guess it's 7:30 there, right? So it's not as early as it is here, I guess.
It's only 7:33 right now.
Right. Well, I used to live on the East Coast, and everything was 1 hour different also. So you get accustomed to everything, right, Joe?
In enough of time, you do. You certainly do.
Well, you know, Joe, I was very, very interested in what you had to say about the railroads. And in the instance of full disclosure to our audience, I took the Penn Central Railroad when I lived up in Putnam County and commuted down to Scarsdale for about 8 months before I went stark raving mad because the commute was actually a 2 hour commute. And I know I'm going to bore you with details for a second, but I drove a Ford Falcon, old Ford Falcon. Actually, if I had the car today, it would be a collector car, be worth a fortune. I sold it to someone for $100. One thing I regret, 3-speed, and it had the original 260 V8 engine in it. Would you believe that? 2-door. It was a beautiful little car. Anyway, I drove that to the train station and caught the 559 on the Harlem division of the Penn Central Railroad, took that down to Scarsdale, at which time I transferred and took a bus to the office. That was exactly a 2 hour trip. So I'm familiar with trains. And then, of course, I took the trains when I lived in New York City in the Bronx, as you did, I understand, also, up in Gun Hill Road. And I was a Bure Avenue boy where the Dukes and the Counts reigned. And what gang was prominent in your neighborhood? Was it the Fordham Baldies or who? Who was the? Do you recall what the big gang was in your area?
Oh, Ty and Dukes.
Who's that?
Back in those.
What's the name of them again, Joe?
They called themselves the Italian Dukes.
Oh, the Italian Dukes. Okay, we had the Dukes. It was a very small gang, but they were rough. They actually forced me to buy cough medicine from the drugstore because their welcome was already well taken, you know, and I had to go in there, and literally they would meet me at the bottom of the train station and wait for me to get up, and they literally, they're carrying me, you know, to the drugstore and tell me exactly what they wanted me to buy. I had little option at the time. Well, anyway, those are the fun, good old days, Joe. This morning we're going to talk a little bit about the bailouts. Now, I understand that you are somewhat sympathetic to the government bailing out the auto industries because they did so for the railroads while you were working for the Penn Central Railroad, Joe?
As a matter of fact, Joe, I worked for the same line that you were just talking about, the Harlem Line, which
right.
went from Brewster, New York,
that's right.
all the way to Times Square.
That's right. That's it.
And
that's the line.
I used to work on that railroad, and I know all the stops that you're talking about. I used to live in New Fairfield, Connecticut, so I used to work in Brewster.
Oh, okay. All right. I know the area. Very good. Well,
so
Joe, geez, I felt like we're neighbors, you know.
What I wanted to say to you, Joe, is that back in the somewhat middle 70s, from 1972 to 75, somewhere in there, is where the government took over New York Central, Penn Central, Erie Lackawanna, and about four or five other railroads that were all bankrupt.
That's correct.
And made one bankrupt railroad. At that time, we all thought they were nuts.
Right.
And they said, you know, what are they doing? Do they know what they're doing?
Right.
And they made one railroad called the Conrail.
Right. Yeah, Joe, excuse me.
Later, we realized they started to make money.
I apologize for interrupting, but we have a caller. Would you like to take the caller now?
Oh, whatever you want. Sure,
okay, right then. Call us, area code 740. You're on the air. Your first name and where you're calling from, please, and your question or comments. Thank you for calling Liberty Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Tony in Ohio. I've called previously a few times. It's nice speaking with you again, Joe. And
Tony.
Hello to your guest.
Thank you.
Hello.
Yeah, Tony, I hear you. Thank you very much for calling in.
Basically, I called in, Joe, because I was having a problem getting the feed off of the Internet for some reason. I seem to be getting it now. I've refreshed a few times, but I wanted to listen in on the line. But since you brought me on, I just wanted to tell you thank you very much for your influence on me. I actually started a show last night. It's called Pro Individual. It's on at 1:30 a.m., and it's basically around the same principles that you're espousing here on a daily basis. And it's by no accident. You influenced me tremendously.
Oh, geez. That's a privilege to hear that. I'm honored. I really am, Tony. Thank you so much for letting me know. Now, you said your program is 1 a.m.
Yeah, Eastern Standard Time, 1 a.m. It's called Pro Individual. The topic last night was natural law. Tonight it'll be non-intervention foreign policy.
All right, 1 a.m. Who's up at that time, Tony?
Well, on the West Coast you get some listeners.
Okay, well, that's great that you can do that. It's wonderful, you know, because people, you know, there are many people who are up, and there are not many programs that are live at that time. So I applaud you for doing that. That's great. Well, thank you so much for calling in, and I'm glad you got your feedback. And good luck on your program. And let me hear from you, see how things are going. And what's the name of your program again now? Because I want to look it up.
It's called Pro Individual, PRO-Individual.
Okay, I'll listen in then, Tony. Thank you so much, and good luck.
Thanks a lot, Joe. You guys have a great day.
Right. Bye-bye. Well, you know, it's awfully nice getting a compliment first thing in the morning. Okay, all right, where were we? Okay, allow me to let you continue, you know, on your on the background on this.
Okay, Joe, like I was saying before, I worked that railroad, I worked that line, the Harlem line, and I found that after a few years of working for Conrail, I wanted to give the president now the benefit of the doubt, at least, because of my experience with Conrail.
Okay.
They after a few years, they started making money, and I understand that they're on the New York Stock Exchange at this time, making more money than they ever did before. As you know, the railroads can move tonnage much more efficiently than any other trucking industry
right.
Firm can.
Right.
And I've always been pro railroad because it's the most efficient way of moving any kind of cargo that you might have.
Right. Now, I, in the interest of full disclosure, I have done absolutely no research on the railroads. I haven't had time. I wanted to, and I said, boy, if I start doing that, I will have a project that will last me for months, because it is a very, very complicated, very, very broad-scoped subject. I mean, you just can't, there's no such thing as a little, the little booklet of railroads. So I said, well, I'm going to wing it this time. Let me tell you some of the things that I suspect or I know, and Joe, correct me if I'm wrong. The railroads were the most highly regulated industry in the United States almost since their inception, or at least since the 1900s.
Yeah, you're probably right about that. But a lot of other things were regulated at that time, too, don't forget.
Oh, yeah, right.
And in 1980, Ronald Reagan took a lot of the regulations off of everything.
Yeah. Well, you know, we say that because I hear that a lot from people running for office saying, now today about the stock market, saying, well, it's the lack of legislation, you know, regulation is the reason why we got in this financial demise that we're in today. And it's like you have this building filled with regulation, books with small print, millions of pages of regulation. They change or take away one line, and everyone says, no regulation, like there's no regulation at all, you know. And the problem that I have with that statement, Joe, is I'm not debating that, but when we say he took away some of the regulation, I guess it would be a lifetime endeavor to sit down and understand all of the legislation and then understand really what was taken away, and then at the same time, what was added. And we probably will never know that because it's too complicated, and probably no one in the world knows that. My point...
Yeah, I agree with that, you know, Joe, and that's why I say we need to give the president a little bit of slack at this time. He's only been in office for 6 months, and I would say that it's going to take at least a year or two before we really know what's going to happen. And I'm like you. I don't want to see all of this money being spent. My grandchildren are going to have to pay for it. But I would like to give the man a benefit of the doubt for at least a year or two, to give him that time to say, hey, it's going to work or it's not going to work.
Right.
I think that's how long it's going to take, and that's all I want to do. Just give the man a little slack.
All right, let's take the other approach then. Let's assume that the government did not bail out or assist the railroads. What would have happened?
I can't answer that. I really don't know. I guess there would have been a lot of trucks out there moving goods.
They wouldn't have gone out and dug up all of the rails, would they? And taken all the railroad cars and say,
no,
you know, train for sale. Anyone want to buy a diesel locomotive out there? You know.
All of these people went to work. Taxpayers went to work using the rail.
Right.
They relied on it.
Oh, no, I agree. So did I. And I was one of them. And of course, when I was in New York City, I rode the subway, and I did so for 15 years. I mean, I had everything memorized. I can do it in my sleep. I was a strap hanger since I was a little kid. And I love public transportation. Don't get me wrong. In fact, my sons cringe because I'm one of the few people in Tulsa that actually has a bus pass, because I'm over 65 and I get a discount. And sometimes I'll walk a mile and a half just to take the bus, sit down and read and go downtown. And they say, Dad, you can get a limousine to take you downtown. I said, nah, I like to walk. I like to take the bus. You know, you can take the boy out of the city, but you can't take the city out of the boy, so to speak, you know. And I enjoy that. I get some exercise. I sit there. People are friendly, you know. And I figured no one's ever going to rob a bus. No one's ever going to hijack a bus, because everyone on the bus, basically, let's face it, Joe, are poor, relatively poor. You don't find the elite, you know, people wearing million-dollar jewelry. If someone came in with an AK-47 and says, okay, you know, all the money on the floor, the guy would collect $1.36. You know, I think it's the safest place in the world. You can't go wrong. Anyway, but so I like mass transportation. What I don't like is government-funded public transportation. I don't think there's any need for it, and I think it's very inefficient. I think, I don't know what would have happened to the... Now, when I worked for a fully, a major oil company, in fact, I'll tell you, it was Royal Dutch Shell, we were the main supplier for fuel for Penn Central. And unfortunately, at the time, I was the supervisor of commercial credit at the time, and guess who was in charge of Penn Central? Me. And I used to get the Dun & Bradstreet reports, And then one Monday morning, I got a report saying it's all over. They went from AAA rating on Dun & Bradstreet to bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And we lost, I don't remember. It was a phenomenal, phenomenal amount of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars. Anyway, so this was not happy time for anybody. But my point being is that the problem that I always have with these scenarios that you're bringing up, and I'm not disagreeing with you, don't get me wrong, is that I never know what the alternative is. Let me give you an example. People like to argue that we need government because we need roads. And I said we should have private roads. And they can't fathom that. They can't understand that. I said, well, you have, since we never had it, or there's small towns who have it work very well, you don't know what the alternatives are. You don't know how your town would have been better or for worse if you've never had it. You see, we have really no reference point. I heard Jesse Ventura one time say that he was a real libertarian, but he believed in public roads and the government should support roads. He says, if you don't believe that, he says, I'll build a road. He says, I'll put a toll on it. And he says, I'll get rich off everybody else. And I thought that was the dumb. And now I like Jesse Ventura. I'm a real advocate of his. You know, I'm a supporter. Dumbest statement in the world. First of all, a road would cost, even a small road, 1 mile, cost him hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. Secondly, he'd have to build a road from point A to point B to go somewhere that people wanted to go. Then he's going to build a toll. And if he built a toll, then it's got to either be electronic or he's got to pay somebody to go there. How many people are going to use that stupid road that he built in order to bring back, you know, it was the dumbest statement in the world. So I'm saying that we say things that appear to be the right thing. You know, the right thing. Because the railroads today are profitable, because it is. It's the best form of mass goods transportation we have in America, bar none. And so it's become extremely profitable, especially with the high price of fuel. Now, when I sold fuel, when I was in industrial sales for Shell, we were selling diesel fuel, listen to this, to the municipalities like bus lines and trains, 10 cents a gallon.
Yeah.
10 cents a gallon. I remember the price, and I used to say, how do we sell? How do we refine the stuff and ship it? And 10 cents a gallon. It was an amazing thing to me. Now, people paid like 14 or 16 cents. I don't recall this. Now, we're going way, way back because I'm old, you know. I got 2 feet in the grave. I'm just still talking, you know. And but we don't know what the alternative would have been if there was absolutely no government intervention. Now, let me add another thing, Joe. I know this, I invited you to talk and now I'm doing the talking. But, for example, we had government intervention on railroads. Now, who do the railroads compete against? What's their competition?
Other
railroads. And who else?
Well, the trucks.
But trucks, cars, right? I mean, in other words, and also cars, because people take the railroad. In fact, my wife and I 2 years ago took Conrail from Tulsa to Austin, and we just did it just because we wanted to take a train ride, you know. And it was a great experience. Two trains broke down. We had to take the bus from Oklahoma City to Tulsa, then another bus but there was only a bus service then, and then from Oklahoma City to Fort Worth. The train broke down. They put us on a bus. And then from Fort Worth to, to another town. I forgot where it was. We were going at the time. We had to take another bus. It was very frustrating. Anyway, we finally got a train back. But my point being is that the railroads are not competing only against other railroads. They're competing against truckers. They're competing against the highway system. Who built the highway system?
Government.
Yeah. So what the government did, it says, all right, here's the railroads. We're going to highly regulate you. Then what we're going to do is to really screw you is we're going to coerce people. We're going to steal, take people's money. You know, they don't want it. They want us to do it. We're going to steal it from them. You know, you, me, and everybody else. And we're going to build highways that's going to put you out of business. Now,
yeah.
When you think of that, I go, wait a minute. you're subsidizing the railroads, and then you're saying, not only are we going to subsidize you, take my money, but then they're going to take my money to subsidize a competitor. And then to add insult to injury, they say, not only are we going to do that, but then we're going to build airports. And we're going to have these tubes flying all over the place in the air. I know you've never seen them before, but they actually fly. And they're going to be your competitor. And we're subsidizing those suckers as well. And when those suckers go under, you know what we're going to do? We're going to subsidize them again, you know? Take that, you taxpayer. And then we say, look how good government was. They subsidized the railroads. You see what I mean?
You know,
this is my whole problem. My whole problem is this whole system, excuse the word, sucks, you know, and it doesn't make any sense. And we isolate individuals like saying, this congressman is good because he said that. And then when you find out there's not a damn good thing about him, but he talks a good game. All right, but I'll let you go because I have so many problems with government intervention, period, on anything. But get Joe. I talk too much.
I just want to say, as far as I'm concerned, I think government is there to create jobs. And they want to create jobs to create more taxpayers. More taxpayers, more money for the government. And it's a kind of a snowball situation where they're spending taxpayer money to create more taxes. That's basically what I think it is.
Yeah. Now, are you suggesting that constitutionally the government, it was formed to create jobs? Are you saying that this is what they try to do to collect more taxes?
No, this is what they try to do to collect
more taxes. Oh, yeah, okay, because I haven't seen that in the Constitution. Okay, yeah.
Obama's out there right now trying to create more jobs.
Yeah, now, how do you create jobs? I mean, what are some of the cornerstones? I mean, the basic cornerstones of job creation.
Oh, transportation is one big one.
Well, that's a result of a job. I mean, you have a job, you gain transport. Someone will find transportation. I mean, they'll find some way to get there. They'll fly there, they'll walk there. And, oh, by the way, I forgot to include, I said the airlines, the other airlines, airlines rather, other railroads and cars. And let's not forget sidewalks. People can walk as an alternative, right? I mean, that's a competitor to a railroad, too. I know that sounds silly, but I'm saying, and that's subsidized, too, by the government. And they're sucking my blood out of my veins to do that so somebody else can walk, you know? Thank you very much, all right? But my point being is in order to start jobs, now, I've been in business for myself. I started one company went under, Joe, three times. Three times it went under. One time because the guy stole everything from me. A guy was turning the business over to. When I was sort of halfway out of the business, he took everything. Now, he didn't take the major equipment, but he took the databases, the customers, and everything, and he conspired with an affiliated company. They took everything, and they ruined it. They brought it to nothing. I mean, I went from, you know, doing okay to nothing, Joe, okay? And I had to bring it back. You know why I brought it back? Because I was stupid. I worked so hard, I was so mad, I was so angry, I was stupid that I did that, but I was successful, and I hate myself for doing that. But let me tell you my take on it. You won't read this in any textbook. You need innovation, you need initiative, you need productivity. Those are the types of ingredients. Now, that's not the formula, but you need those type things. What does government money do? It doesn't create innovation, it doesn't create initiative, and it doesn't create productivity. So I'm saying that it can't happen. I would bet, whatever the bet is, I want to bet. I want to bet big money, and I'll give it to a bank as a holding company, you know, to put in escrow and say, here's a bet. Joe Florio, Joe Cristiano, we're betting this money. If he wins, give it to him. I want to bet any money he fails miserably because none of the ingredients for starting a business are there. To start a business, you need a tremendous amount of drive. You have to be literally insane to start a business. I know, because I'm not sane. I know that. My mind is not right. I mean, what I went through, nobody in his right mind went through. If I wrote a book on what I did, they'd say this is a fairy tale. But you ask any businessman who went into business, with any sizable business, and say, what did you do? They're embarrassed. You know what? They're embarrassed to talk about it because I asked them. They're actually embarrassed. They go, you know, if I told you, you wouldn't believe it. I said, no, I believe it because my story's going to be worse than yours, you know. Now, how do you get that by government giving you something? if someone gives me something, you know something, Joe? I get lazy. I get so lazy, it's unbelievable. How is that going to create jobs? Now, you can, in fact, let me give you an answer to the unemployment situation. Tomorrow morning, we can have zero unemployment. Everybody's on the government payroll, and government assigns you to do something. Zero unemployment, problem over, recession over, everything is fine. Take away. Go with that, Joe.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, for instance, with the banks, he gave a lot of money, billions of dollars to the banks. And I understand a few of them are starting to pay that top money back. And so, therefore, it's not so much as a gift as it was a loan. I don't know what he's doing with other banks. I'm not into his business. I'm not into government business at all. But I'm only watching what I hear on TV, as you are. And so I'm only going by, I'm making my assumptions by what I hear, see,
right.
and read.
Right.
So that's all I'm going by. I'm just saying, you know, let's see how this works, because I don't know what else we're going to do.
Well, there's so much we can do. Which was the worst depression we had here in the 19th century? I mean, I'm sorry, the 20th century, the worst depression.
33, but I wasn't here then.
You want to know something? I hate to tell you this, Joe, because I never want to tell a host that calls that I treat you with the utmost respect. And believe me, Joe, I'm glad you called me. I'm not arguing with you. Understand? I hope you're not angry.
No.
No, okay, you know.
1930.
Right.
Depression.
Wrong. Okay. All right.
No, okay.
Yeah, really. And I know this for a fact. I just stuff
I was
study.
Born in 39, so I don't know.
All right. 1920. 1920, and if you look at the charts, 1920 was much more severe than the 1930 depression. And I think Coolidge was the president at the time. And you know what he said? He said, you know, things aren't good. What we're going to do is cut government by 50%, which he did. And he says, the second thing we're going to do is we're going to let it go on its own. We're going to let free enterprise work it out, because it's too difficult for jerks like us in office who think we know what we're doing, a bunch of politicians who blabber, know how to run an economy. That's basically what he said, right? Within a year and a half, the economy bounced back, to a higher form of productivity than it was in 1920. By the mid-1921, we were flying, literally flying. No one even knew. I mean, people knew we were in a depression at that time, but it was forgotten about almost immediately because it was so short. By the time people actually lost their jobs and had real, you know, grave circumstances, by the time that happened, they were back to work. So it was like a blip. It was like having a bad headache. Right? What did Harding and Roosevelt do? They promised we're going to do the same thing, and they did the opposite. And the Great Depression lasted, Joe, listen carefully, for 17 years, well through World War II. Another misnomer that, you know, World War II took us out of it. That was crap. We had a depression right through World War II. The only thing, people were working for the government, like I said before. Let's end unemployment. You know, we'll all make tanks. I'll make the front, the left door. You make the right door, Joe. We're both working, you know. This is not right. This is not. Now, understand, Joe, also, that we are in a recession at the same time that we are conducting actually two or three wars, depending on how you want to cut it up. We have over 761 military sites, bases around the world that we are paying for. In over 151 foreign countries, doesn't include the stealth bases. We have over 500,000 military personnel stationed at these bases that you and I are paying for. Now, under those circumstances, what is the government doing? Creating jobs. Government created 600,000 jobs, right? How could we possibly go into a recession? It's not possible. If the government put another 500,000 in the military, made it 1 million, we should be flying high. We would be worse off. You see my point? My point is that...
Well, don't forget now, too, Joe, the population keeps increasing, and we keep getting people from other countries coming in here. And I don't know if you would consider $500,000 or $600,000 jobs a lot, but in these days, that's not.
Oh no, I agree. Oh, relative to the employment, it's not. I'm just saying that. But then we're waging wars in Iraq, in Pakistan, in Iran. I have an industrial health testing company. I deal with industry, all heavy industry. They make metal plates. They make boilers. They make parts for tanks, all this stuff, you know? And we do work with hundreds of these companies, you know, and we're at these companies every day. I used to be there every day, traveled all over the place, right? And my son runs the company now, and he told me yesterday, he said, Dad, he says, we have about the same number of jobs in August, because we have to book a month or two in advance. I said, about the same number of jobs in August as we had last year. I said, well, that's pretty good. I thought we'd have less. You know, I said, quite frankly, I don't care because I don't want to work anymore, you know, with that stuff. And he said, the number of employees that we are testing at each location, at each company, is significantly down. So, of course, you know, we're in a recession. My point being is that, do you know what would happen to this country, Joe, if, in fact, Barack Obama made good to his promise, saying, we're bringing the boys home. We're shutting down the war in Iraq, and they're coming home, which all he's doing is taking from Iraq, and he's putting them in Pakistan, Afghanistan, rather, which they have a much higher chance of getting killed and dying, you know that, right?
Well, I would hope, Joe, that they have a job when they come back, because when I came back out of service, my job was taken. And the government said that, told me that when I got out of service in 1959, that I was going to have my job guaranteed. And I had to go to the Naval Recruiting Center and put in a complaint, and they got my job back. But I'll tell you something, it was not easy working there afterwards, because the person that hired that person had to fire that person. And she was a woman at that time, a woman boss. And she was not easy to work for afterwards.
Well, you see how that gums up everything, Joe. I mean, what if you were a business owner and you got a business going, and then the government says, hey, you got to hire Cristiano back. You say, hey, he's gone for 5 years. You know, I can't do it. You know, I don't have a place for him. You got to do it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I want to see everybody work. I'm not anti-work. I mean, I work so stupidly hard, I'm embarrassed. I got to be honest with you, like a jerk I was, you know. But this is where innovation comes in. When you come back and you go, I don't even have a job. And this is where people's minds start working. This is where you're going, I can't go back to that place. Or if I go back to that place, I put Bobby out of work. You know, I get my job back, but Bobby's out of work and he's been there for 2 or 3 years. Is that right? If I was Bobby, would I like that? No. Well, the government should get involved in that stuff. And this is where it makes our minds go, you know, although I love to have that job as a machinist at the railroad, whatever it is, you know, I got to think of something else. And something else would turn up a lot better without screwing the marketplace up. I mean, this is my feel. This is, you know, this is the way, this is not my feelings or my hope. This is my experience. Whenever, you know, I tell people. People ask me about business all the time because they know I've been in business several times. They always ask me about business. And I said, look, I said, you know, I usually, you know, the questions they ask, I can't answer. But I tell them, I said, you know, I'm only good in business when things are bad. Isn't that funny? When things are good, I get lazy. Joe, I'll be honest with you. I get really lazy when things are good in business. There's no action, you know. When things are bad, I mean, when I say bad, I'm saying beyond bankruptcy, broke, can't pay for anything, I get good. And what is that? That's the initiative. That's the innovation. That's the productivity that I'm talking about. That's what we need in this country. We don't need people accepting paychecks and saying, well, at least I have my job. Well, geez, that's not... That's the gulag, close to the gulag in Russia. Only we're not being beaten. We're mummies. We're like, you know. And then and what happens? Then we're beholden to the federal government, you know, and forever we praise the federal government. And no matter what they say, we would do because they got us our job back, right? And we're slaves to that government.
If I could come to my own defense there, Joe, for a second.
Sure.
When what I was told when I went into service that my job would be held for me, that it was the law that the company that I worked for would have to hold my job for the 2 years that I was in active duty.
Okay.
And when I came back out, my job was not there. And that's why I went and complained about it, because of what I was told.
No, and I don't know. If that was the law, and the company had to abide by the law, they should hire you back. I'm not saying they shouldn't have done that. I'm just saying there shouldn't be a law there in the first place. It should not have been there in the first place. Now, were you drafted?
No. I was in naval. What do you call
reserves?
Reserve. I was naval reserve, and I had to put in 2 years active duty.
Yeah. Well,
I did 6 years altogether, but I had 2 years active duty. And during the 2 years, I was on a destroyer on a ship.
Yeah.
And then when I came off that ship, I went back to work, and the job was gone.
Yeah.
So I went and complained.
Let me give you my opinion of that. If you voluntarily did that, when you did that, you say, you know, I'm going to go into service, right? I'm going to do that because, for whatever reason. You know, I want to serve my country. You know, I'm going to learn electronics, whatever it is. You know, I want to travel around the world, whatever it is. But also on the other side, if I do that, you know, there's a chance I may not get my job back when I get here. You know, I come back. I mean, these are decisions that you as an individual have to make. But once you make that decision, based on, well, I can go into the reserves, go away for a couple of years and, you know, do whatever is expected of me, do a good job, come back, and expect my job to be there, that's not right. Now, many companies, now we always talk about the companies who don't take people back. You know, many companies, and in fact, most companies, when people come back, they take them back, they make room, somehow they do that. But we don't talk about them. You know, we talk about the mean bosses who, you know, who do the worst things in the world. You know, one of my, and I'm going to tell you something. Now, this I learned, and I know you're going to laugh when you hear this. One of the young employee who works for me, this kid is like a son to me. They say, what do you work for that crazy Cristiano for? You know, they think I'm a madman and that I'm a mean boss. And this person told me this. This is the God's honest truth, Joe, and I'm not lying. In fact, I'm embarrassed when I say this. He goes, kid says, he says, why do you work over there? He says, because I feel loved. And they told me that.
That's good.
And I'm not kidding you. Now, I wouldn't say that if it wasn't true, because it's so ridiculous. I mean, I'd say the guy's a madman, you know? But I'm just saying that not every boss at every company is such. Oh, and by the way, he was nearly burnt to death in a car accident. He should have been dead by all rights, but he made it through. And he was out for months. And one day, he just showed up. And by the way, and I was paying him when he was in the hospital. Okay? I didn't have to do that. Right? He was a poor kid. He was a poor kid. Really poor kid. Very poor. You know? He came back. He came in one morning. He said, hi. He came in. He sat down. Put him back to work. I say, well, Jonathan, you don't have a job anymore. You've been out now for 3 months. Just didn't say anything.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just saying that not every boss is going to say, you went out there, screw you. And so you got to eliminate all that. What you have to say is that what decisions do we make as individuals in this supposedly free economy? If I want to go on a ship, I go on a ship. What's the consequence of going on a ship? I may come back, and Cristiano is such a mean boss, he doesn't want me there in the first place. If you imagine if I try to come back, he'd kick my ass down the road, you know? But we got to make that decision. And we can't say, well, the government's good because they guaranteed my job back. Government had no right at all to tell anybody, you have to guarantee that job to that person. Absolutely none.
I know, but that's what happened.
Yeah, I know, I agree. See, no, we're not in disagreement, but what I'm trying to do, Joe, with this conversation, I'm trying to get you to think to the root of what goes on. Not the consequences, not the end result, saying, well, I got my job back, government is good. Government's not good. Government's rotten. You were lucky you got your job back. But that wasn't right because, you know, it reminds me of this. It reminds me, a girl is getting married on Sunday, and she prays for good weather. I mean, and she's going to have this beautiful outdoor wedding. Listen, Karen, this is a metaphor, if anything else. And she prays and prays and prays. Oh, I hope there's no beautiful, sunny, warm day. And guess what? It's a beautiful, sunny, warm day, and she's so happy. Right? The farmer across the road has been praying for what? Rain. You see my point?
Yeah.
You know, there's a cause and effect on everything. Crops are dying. You know, she's happy she's getting married. Now, she got to think, she says, well, we haven't had rain in 2 months. We need rain desperately. You know, now I'm going to say, let's continue this drought because I'm getting married. You see my point? And basically, that's what you're saying. You're saying, well, I know it's not the best legislation, but I got my job back. So I'm saying, I want you to think through the root cause of things, you know?
It rained on my daughter's wedding day, so I guess she wasn't happy, but the farmer was happy.
That's right. Yeah, but not only the farmer was happy, but everyone ate, and so did she. I mean, we had food. I'm saying that's the gamble you take, you know? It rains on your wedding day, and it becomes a better wedding.
We take that gamble every morning when we wake up.
Absolutely, and the government, can you imagine the government guaranteeing you that? I'm going to guarantee you're going to wake up and get to work.
Life when I woke up this morning. I could be dead.
Yeah. But by the way, Joe.
Like Billy Mays. You know Billy Mays? He was a nice guy on Pitchman on TV. He sold a lot of products. He's gone. There's no guarantee. We don't have a guarantee for life.
That's right. We have no guarantee. Yeah. Joe, let me ask you. Do you have a Liberty Talk Radio t-shirt?
No, not yet.
Oh, wait. Oh, did I ask you? Did you give me your address?
Yes, I think I sent it to you, Joe.
That's right. It's going out. That's being mailed today. I just got the reorder in today. I wanted to mention that to you. And they're beautiful. They're burgundy, and it took long because I get the best ones. None of this garbage stuff, you know? So I really hope you enjoy it. Joe, I set aside 45 minutes for this program. We have 3 minutes left. I'm sorry that I dominated a program, but this program is about education, you know?
Yes.
And that's what I wanted to get across is that let's look at the root cause of what it is and what we have to do as individuals to survive. The government just sort of bastardizes everything, although maybe to my advantage, but when it's to your advantage, I get screwed. I got to pay for it, you know? And vice versa, by the way. And that's not the role of government. I mean, of course, that's not the role of government. But when we do it ourselves, we all benefit.
I'm not sure who has the answer, Joe, but I'm going with the flow, I guess you could say.
Okay, all right. Well, Joe, I'll give you the next minute. Tell me off.
No, I just think you're right, like, and in many ways. But I think in my lifespan, I think 70 years, what I've seen, I think the government is doing the best it can under the circumstance, especially at these times.
Well, you know, the best thing the government can do is nothing. That's when we did the best, is when the government did nothing. We had the best economy. We got out of the depressions. We had an honest currency. Look at the currency we have now. It's garbage. We may have a total, not a depression, but a whole meltdown. Why? Because of the government. I can't give them credit for that.
Well, maybe you're right. Maybe you're wrong, too, Joe. I don't know.
Joe, the penny used to have 95% copper. Now there's only 0.8% copper. It's garbage coin. All the coins are garbage.
Oh, I agree. I mean, there's lots of things. I mean, a dollar used to be worth a dollar, not anymore.
That's right. And who's responsible for that? Only one person's responsible for that, the people who print the money, and they're not even Americans. They're foreigners. They're Europeans. It's terrible, Joe. I mean, it's really terrible, you know? Anyway, Joe, I want to thank you so much for calling. I'm sorry, I hope I didn't browbeat you too much. I hope you enjoyed the program or something, you know? I didn't mean to get on my diatribe, but I know very little about the subject other than I don't think intervention works for everybody.
I think you're one of the best people on radio, and I enjoy your show, Joe.
Okay, Joe, I love you. Thank you so much for calling in, and let me know what's happening up on, if you hear what's happening on Gunner Roll, let me know, okay?
Thank you, Joe. Take care.
All right, you too. Thank you very much. Well, geez, I didn't expect that at all. I guess I talk too much. Well, this is the end of today's program. We'd like to thank Ranch Acres Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you are either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. Ron Paul has a sign on his desk that says, "Don't steal, the government hates competition." With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well, stay tuned.